This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome back, everyone, to the final part of this special series brought to you by Pop Goes the Classics here on the Place to Be Nation Pop Feed. I'm Scott Criscolo. We are at the end of the line now. In this five-part series, we have talked about and gone through the history and the journey and the fun and the games and the misery that has been at times the James Bond franchise. Not much misery. Not at all. Because we love Bond in every which way, even in the bad movies. And there are one or two. But here, in part five, our final part, we're going to talk about the Bond that most new fans know. If you've become a Bond fan in the last 20 years, you may remember Pierce Brosnan a little bit. But definitely in the last 15 years, you know this guy. And you want to talk about a controversial casting choice. Boy, we're going to talk about that tonight. In many, many ways. But first, let me bring in my partner on this journey. He has been exceptional in his debut here on the Place to Be Nation Pop Feed. Long anticipated. I think I picked the perfect topic for him to debut on. He is the former purveyor of OpenTheFridge.net. He is chomping in the bit. He is tired of as miserable as I am about losing all of my wrestling shows, this guy is about miserable losing all of his conventions. instead of being miserable together, we're trying to find ways to stay happy together, and him helping me and doing this great series with me has been a treat. And that is, of course, Tech. Welcome back.
Thank you so very much. Happy to close out the series with you.
Yeah, it's been a fun one. Of course, part one, we did Sean Connery. Part two, The Others, the three movies done by the other two guys, George Lazenby and Timothy Dalton. Part three, of course, our guy, Sir Roger Moore. And, of course, part four, which debuted last week, Pierce Brosnan. So tonight, the current Bond, whose fifth movie himself and the 25th in the franchise will come out this coming November. Now, if you're listening to this well after it debuted, it may have already come out. And if it did, awesome. I hope you liked it, because I have a feeling him and I did. The final Bond, or the current Bond, I should say, definitely was a questionable choice. However, once now you look at the creative direction they went, I don't question it as much as I did originally. Of course, with our final part, we're talking about the current Bond, Mr. Daniel Craig. I knew nothing of this guy. Nothing. I even heard of him when he was cast on October 14th, 2005. Just a mere 3 years after Die Another Day, which died its own slow death, and the the way it was described, almost firing of Pierce by Barbara Broccoli and Michael Wilson. We won't get into whether that's true or not. That's between them. I don't like getting into that kind of stuff. I just like letting everyone know how the timeline went, but however it was is up to them. And one thing about Pierce, he doesn't regret. I don't think there's any regrets because he was on the Everything or Nothing documentary. So we know that he still knows what, he's part of the franchise. So they decided, the family, the Broccolis, that apparently it was time to start from scratch. 20 Bond films was enough for this, shall we say, timeline. Little do we realize how they would adjust the timeline so much. But on October 14th, 2005, we get the announcement that this British actor from Chester, England, who started acting in 1992, is the new Bond, Daniel Roughton Craig. Two things I noticed when I saw the press conference. Number one, he's blonde. Like, what the fuck? And number two, he's freaking ripped. Like, you could see it in his suit that he's not skinny. he's, you know, pretty jacked. And in his first film, he would prove that to me. So the first thing I looked and turned to my brother and I said, "Who the hell is this?" And little did I realize that with this casting choice, we were just going in a whole completely different direction. But we'll get to the creative aspect of it in the movies in a second. When you first saw him, what were you thinking?
I, too, had no idea who Daniel Craig was. I did not realize that I had already seen him in Tomb Raider, the first Angelina Jolie Tomb Raider movie. It shows how much of an impact that movie had on me. I had not seen Road to Perdition. And I had not seen Layer Cake, which was a movie that a lot of people cited, like, "Oh, you got to see it. It's great. He's great in it. He's great in it."
I did see Layer Cake.
Yeah. Yep. So I had no idea. I do remember the controversy over the Blonde Bond. I didn't care because early on when he was cast, I think it was the cover of like, I don't know, USA Today or something. It was him. It was the now famous photo of him kind of holding, he's in the tux, he's holding the gun. The gun is kind of in the foreground of the photo. And it must have been the lighting because in that photo, it looked like they had darkened his hair. To which I went, "Oh, okay, they probably darkened his hair for the movie. So the blonde thing isn't a factor." Again, it was probably just the lighting because nothing actually changed. So I had nothing to go on. I was just willing to take it on faith. I knew there really wasn't anywhere to go but up after Die Another Day. So I was hopeful. It was like the casting of a new Batman, you know. I mean, that's burned us in the past too. But to continue that comparison, the Nolan Batman Begins, the first Christopher Nolan Batman movie had come out in 2005. And of course, a lot of people were referring to Casino Royale, Craig's first movie, as James Bond Begins, because it is the first story, and they were acknowledging that. But it was like, you know, all right, Christian Bale's going to be Batman now. Well, all right, well, we've gotten new Batmans in the past, we've got new Bonds in the past. So, and again, I had nothing to base any kind of opinion on. So I went in cold, I went in open. And was right there in October of 2006 with everybody else.
Yep. So little do we realize that finally we started getting some legal waggling out of the way creatively, because the one thing my brother and I always, and you just mentioned the first film, the one thing my brother and I always wondered was, all these years, why didn't they do a proper Bond movie called Casino Royale? I've seen the book. My grandmother owned the books, and I remember the David Niven movie.
A farce. Satire.
It was a parody. Yeah. It was a parody. It was a satire. It was funny. It was entertaining. I've watched it, but it's not canon, of course. So I'm like, all right, works for me, and I will contend that once I heard about our first Bond movie, which we will mention right now, came out on November 17th, 2006, Casino Royale.
Oh, I thought it was October. Oh, all right, cool. November.
November 17th. October 05 is when he was announced.
Right, maybe that's but something.
November 17th, 2006 was... was the release of Casino Royale. So they jump right in, and we now find out that, similar to what J.J. Abrams would do 3 years later, we almost have an alternate timeline. Although, not really. Yes and no. We're going back in time to the beginning, when Bond first achieves his 00, because we get that we get kind of that hint of it in Dr. No, when M kind of breaks Sean Connery's balls that, you know, you can go back to doing Standard Intelligence. And he kind of stares at him like, fuck that shit. So that's the only time we've ever kind of alluded to the fact that Bond was a paper pusher in the beginning of his British intelligence career. And how did he become one of the nine 00s? Well, Casino Royale was it. But we don't recast completely. And I think the smartest thing they did, because you needed some kind of foundation if you're going to start from scratch, the best thing they did was keep Judi Dench. Best thing. There was no need to replace her. No need to replace her.
And they did it smart because they keep her, and rather than throw a whole, like with the Brosnan era, rather than throw a new Money Penny at, well, in that one we kept Q and we got a new Money Penny and a new Q. In this one we keep M and we don't get Money Penny or Q. They saved that, and I think that was smart,
right?
Because we're easing back in to this character's world.
Yeah, we all knew, and everybody now knew, except for those two dipshits that for the New York Times and that other website, that Die Another Day was garbage. And we needed I've said this in multiple parts, Tech and I both have, that there have been multiple come to Jesus moments in the history of the Bond franchise. The first one was Spy Who Loved Me. The second one was GoldenEye. This is the third one. And there'd be another one coming soon within Daniel's run, which we'll get to in a second, where we needed a good Bond coming in or we're screwed. It happened in the mid-70s. We got Spy Who Loved Me. It happened in the mid-90s. We got GoldenEye. Now here, we needed a good Bond film. So let's wipe the slate clean. I think the best thing they did was definitely wipe the slate clean and start from scratch. So in essence, how would you characterize it before we go any further? Because I think we need to kind of lay this down before we move on. Would you consider this just going back almost pre-Sean in the timeline? Or is this like JJ's Trek and we're on an alternate timeline? What would you consider this?
I've heard arguments for both. another pair of podcasters, Matt Myra and Matt Gourley, do the James Bonding podcast. And Matt Myra is a staunch supporter of the fact that every portrayal of Bond you see on screen is the same character. And this story, this Daniel Craig's Casino Royale, is the story that precedes every Connery, Moore, Brosnan, you know, adventure that we've seen to this point.
Okay.
It's tough to go with that, obviously, because of the time, you know, that everything's set in. Like, all right, so this is clearly 2006. Technology is of the era. And then, so you mean to tell me that his next assignment is, you know, in 1960s Jamaica?
Yeah, really. I know. Yeah.
So if you're willing to suspend your disbelief to that degree, sure. This is the James Bond. It goes back to the theory that a lot of people have that James Bond is a name and number assigned to different men. And that this is the most recent keeper of the title. I'm not a big fan of that theory. I like to think, you know, hey, you know, if it's out of time, sure. But hey, it's one guy. It's one story. It's one career. That's fine. Like the Simpsons, you know, Bart Simpson's been 10 years old for like 30 years.
Exactly. No, you're exactly right. Exactly right. Okay. So we do bring back plenty, though. We bring back Purvis and Wade, and this time we had Paul Haggis. As you mentioned on our last episode, Martin Campbell, just like he did for Pierce and GoldenEye, gives a tremendous directing performance for Daniel in this one.
Yeah, I'm really curious to see, since he's kind of been the guy to bring out the new Bond. I mean, granted, there's only been two over the last, you know, 25 years. I'm curious to see if they'll bring him back when they recast. I'd like them to.
Martin Campbell?
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. He's a good launching pad director. He's like our modern day Terrence Young.
Yeah.
David Arnold's back for the music.
Yeah,
which is
he
excellent.
Is.
And after, well, for me, back-to-back stinkers. For you, a pretty good song and a stinker. We get the song, and now we go back to, oh, we need somebody. Now from here on out, we have to have modern popular singers because there's nobody else around. This time we get Chris Cornell, God rest his soul, frontman for Soundgarden and Audioslave, to do the song You Know My Name. So the best part I like about this – because I used to laugh about the whole License to Kill song with Gladys Knight. My brother and I are like, okay, you can't really put Casino Royale in a song without it sounding stupid, like License to Kill, where Gladys Knight put that square peg in a round hole. So they didn't. They just did a song. And I love the animation in the beginning of that movie with all the jacks and diamonds and heart, like all the card things flying. I love that open. I love that.
I adore this song. It's maybe a controversial opinion, but it may be my favorite Bond song out of all 24. And yes, that opening sequence is such a standout. You know, yes, it looks like an old iPod commercial where it's, you know, animated silhouettes. But yeah, the aesthetic, just the greens, the reds, the blacks, the whites, it's so vibrant. It's so engaging. I absolutely love that opening.
I do too. I love the song. It's not my favorite Bond song. That's a ballsy call. I'll give you credit for that. I'll give you credit for it being ballsy. I don't agree, but I agree that it's a tremendous song. It's not the best, in my opinion. But as you have done through the first four parts of this series, you have distinguished yourself as one of great character and charisma. So
thank you. As
out of left field as that comment was, we'll keep it rolling. But no, the song is tremendous. And Chris Cornell, and he had a good one thing I will say for and we'll talk about individually for all five of Daniel's songs, they're all pretty good. I will say that. I think they're all pretty good. Even the next one. We'll get to that. So the plot is again, Casino Royale takes place at the beginning of Bond's career as 007, earning his license to kill. He's on an assignment to bankrupt terrorist financier, one of my favorite names, Le Chiff, in a high-stakes poker game at the Casino Royale in Montenegro. Bond falls in love with Femme Fatale Vesperlinde, who was actually a treasury employee trying to watch him so he doesn't spend other people's money. It is for the first time since probably, I guess you could say, from Dr. No to From Russia with Love and from On Her Majesty's Secret Service to Diamonds Are Forever, we're going to have a story arc that goes to the next movie, which I don't think has happened in any of the others. No.
Not to the degree that this one did. The Quantum is definitely a direct sequel, picks up where this one left off.
Absolutely a direct sequel. So we have Daniel Craig. Judi Dench is back. Mads Mikkelsen, who I love, who's great in everything.
He is so great in this movie.
He is tremendous as Le Chiff. And one of my favorite weird things in the history of villains, Le Chiff has, I'm going to see if I can pronounce it properly. Le Chiff has, I have to look at the word. I thought it was in this. He cries blood. He has blood in his tears, but I'm trying to find the actual name of the, I thought it was in the description here.
I like how he says it in the movie. It's a derangement of the tear duct. Nothing sinister.
Yes. Nothing sinister. you know what? If I click Le Chiff's character, I think it says it. Strasbourg is, I think it's called, Hemolacra? I'm trying to find the medical term.
Hemolacria.
Yeah, something like that. You can have it done by a damaged tear duct, which is how he got it, because you see the scar on his face. I mean, we're not talking like you know, crying blood, like, you know, like horror movie blood, but just like a little, you know,
little redness
on the hanky. Anyway, Mads Mikkelsen is tremendous in that role, and he would be great in everything else he'd ever do after that too. Eva Green is the woman, and she plays Vesperlinde, and she's very good. She's very good. Another French model. Very good. She had a little, I like her. And I didn't realize until I actually looked at her, she's the main character on the Showtime series. Well, she was the main character on the Showtime series, Penny Dreadful. It took me a minute to compare it, but I'm like, wait a minute, that's Vesper Lynd.
Oh, which also featured former Bond, Timothy Dalton.
Timothy Dalton, correct. And I think this is just as tremendous a casting choice. We bring back our good friend, Felix Leiter.
Felix Leiter, who we have not seen since 1989.
Yes, thank God, because because God rest, you know, rest in peace, David Hedison, but you kind of flushed it down the toilet with that one.
Yeah, but we get Jeffrey Wright.
Yeah, Jeffrey Wright. What a choice, huh?
Yeah, Jeffrey Wright's awesome. And he plays it like no one has ever played Felix. Like, he's not in the movie for very long, but when he approaches Bond and he introduces himself and you realize, oh, that's who he is, he's just kind of menacing.
Yeah.
To kind of put a word on it.
I've seen him. The two things I know him very well in are, let me think. He was in Shaft in 2000.
I think that was the first thing I ever saw him in.
Yeah. He was in Jonathan Demme's remake of The Manchurian Candidate, which is not great, but not bad. The two things that I know him great in is Westworld.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked him in he was a tremendous villain in Boardwalk Empire on HBO. Tremendous villain there. His name was Dr. Valentin Narcisse. Tremendous. Great name. So he is our, and finally we get a Felix in the Jack Lord mold of, and you know what? For this movie, you kind of needed it, because remember, Bond was, people seem to forget, remember, Bond's a rookie. So you needed a CIA, you know, equal that's got a little more, you know, a little longer in the tooth.
Yeah. Know? And they're both there for the same reason.
Correct.
They're both there participating in the game to thwart Lechief.
Yes.
They just don't know it until it's almost too late.
Right. There's some great scenes in this movie. That car flipping, Bond fucking putting himself back to life after stabbing himself with friggin' adrenaline or whatever. It's Daniel Craig really jumps into this role with both feet. And I think I was thankfully wrong at his performance, because he comes off as so well vulnerable that I don't think any of the other Bonds would have done well, any of the other actors. Sean at times did, but by Roger and then Timothy and then Pierce, vulnerability was not in the equation. But Daniel, to his credit, did a great job looking vulnerable. Remember the scene after he almost dies, he's staring in the mirror with his shirt all fucked up and everything, and he's kind of looking at it like, what the hell did I get myself into? You never see that look from anybody else to that point. So I was pleasantly surprised at how great he was in that spot. And him and Vesper really become very close, almost like with Tracy in Majesty. And then, of course, we get the one of the sickest torture scenes ever. I don't know if there's an official term for it, but I'd rather be dead than have that happen to me. That is, of course, Bond is sitting in a chair with a hole in the seat, and his twig and giggleberries get smacked with a like a fucking Delta House paddle or whatever the hell it was.
Not the euphemism I was expecting.
I don't know. That was the first one that came into my head.
Yeah, but, it's just this knotted rope.
Yeah, it hurt. I mean, I'm freaking the fuck out now thinking about it. So I am just impressed and in love with this movie. It is clearly the best first movie. Well, where would you rank it between? All right, let's not count the others. Let's pick the other big three. So let's put these four in a group: Dr. No, Live and Let Die, GoldenEye, and this.
The only one for me that it would compare to is GoldenEye, in terms of quality. They both, though, have their shortcomings. I was not expecting this.
Well, you're going to get a better question later, so.
I might give the edge to GoldenEye. Just because, like I said, I said last episode, my biggest gripe with that movie is the music. And that's, you know, beginning to end, obviously. But it doesn't always detract from the movie. My biggest gripe about this movie has much more to do with the story, but I'll get to that later to discussing the movie as a whole.
Right. This is my favorite. This is, in my opinion, the best of the four firsts. And that's saying a lot because, you know me, I love Live and Let Die.
Right.
But,
yeah.
But this is the best of the of the big four. This one's the best of the first ones. And that includes Dr. No. Yeah, it 150 million to make, and it made 616 million. That's pretty damn good. At this point now, MGM and Columbia are producing with Eon, and Sony is distributing. So now all the heavyweights are involved now. I remember this being a pretty big deal that Bond was being, because for this 4-year gap between Die Another Day and this, between 02 and 06, we didn't know what the hell was going on. Kind of the same thing with the 6 years between 89 and 95. I love that Bond. I love watching Bond play cards. I always do. Going back to when he was playing blackjack or whatever in Dr. No, I'm assuming that's what he's playing.
Baccarat.
And then, of course,
Fleming was obsessed with Baccarat to the point where the actual Casino Royale novel is essentially Fleming writing an instruction manual on how to play it.
Yeah, pretty much. And then, of course, Chemin de Fer, which is where the famous term Neuf La Banque comes from. Chemin de Fer. That's where, of course, for those that listen over on the Place to Be Wrestling Network, on Place to Be Nation's main event, when I talk about our matches and stuff between me, Nate, and Steve, I always pass the shoe. And I got that from James Bond movies, because the wooden thing that the cards are in is called the shoe. So that's where I get that from, in case anybody knew.
He's supposed to be playing Baccarat in this movie. The production is what changed it to Texas Hold'em.
Yep.
Because they probably figured that would be easier for the audience to follow.
Yeah. So top to bottom, this is a tremendous movie. In my opinion, the best of all the four major debuts. I mean, you could throw The Living Daylights in there if you want, but because Timothy only did two, I don't bother. But it wouldn't pass any of these anyway. So Daniel Craig hits a home run his first time out. Everything's great. And then we get to 2 years later when, once again, Barbara and Michael kind of whiffed. We get...
Okay. Here's the thing.
Came out on November 14th, 2008. Just want to give the date to reference. Mm-hmm. Back doing the music. Mark Forster directs. We're back to Haggis, Purvis, and Wade. Sounds like cheesy attorneys. We are, of course, talking about Quantum of Solace, which the title alone I like because I think I've said this to you in the past. Just think of Sean saying that. Quantum of Solace. That's such a Bond sound. But unfortunately, plenty of other problems. In the film, Bond seeks revenge for the death of Vesper Lynd. Of course, she died at the end of Casino Royale. Spoiler! And is assisted by... And by the way, we're not doing spoilers because if you're not a Bond fan, you're not really listening to this anyway. So obviously, if you're listening to this, you've seen all the movies. Camille Montz, who is plotting revenge for the murder of her own family. The trail eventually leads him to wealthy businessman Dominic Green. A terrible villain name. A member of the Quantum Organization, which intends to stage a coup d'etat in Bolivia to seize control of their water supply. What the fuck does all that mean? That's the dumbest sentence I've ever read. Bolivia? What? Why Bolivia? I don't get it. the plot seems simple enough, but it's not. It's a mess. It is one of the most confusing plots since probably World Is Not Enough. I'll never forget watching this movie in the theater with my brother and my mom, I think. And I think I went with my dad, too. Yeah, it was all of us, the four of us. And I go to what the hell are they talking about? Like, I got lost. After like 45 minutes, I got lost. The casting, not terrible. I'll let you jump in on that. But go ahead and I'll pull the ripcord for you. I mentioned the plot. We talk about the continuation from Royale, from Casino. Jump into the deep end with this one.
Yeah, Casino Royale ends on such a great note. You know, Bond, you know, the whole thing that happens with Vesper or whatever. He finds Mr. White, you know, the guy pulling the strings with Lechiffre. Find out that, you know, he's the mastermind behind everything that's going on. So here we pick up exactly where that left off. He guns him down at his, you know, Spanish villa where Anakin and Padme have their first kiss, you know. And then we pick up right here. And I can only describe Quantum of Solace in one way. This is for all the gamers listening. Quantum of Solace is DLC for Casino Royale. It's not a complete movie. It tells its own story, but it's best viewed in conjunction with the story that precedes it. Because, it, like you said, it's a simple plot, but it's a weak plot. And the reason for that is this movie is a victim of the writer's strike that occurred right around production. Like, you know, we have Purvis, Wade, and Haggis back as the credited writers, but to account for the fact that, you know, the writers were on strike, you have both Daniel Craig and the director, Mark Forster, contributing to sections of the script. And that right there, you know, you've already got the too many cooks metaphor, you know, hanging over you, just this mishmash of ideas and voices. So that's a big contributor to why this movie suffers. And here they are attempting for the first time in years to reestablish Spectre. Now, obviously, they don't have the rights to Spectre because of the whole Kevin McClory thing, which at the time was still languishing in, you know, legal hell or whatever. So they decide to develop Quantum as kind of the Spectre of the new age, you know, an analog. Only to have that carpet yanked out from under them in a couple of years, but we'll get to that. So they're attempting to set up something that doesn't end up paying off in any regard. The only real good thing to come out of this movie is Mr. White, who we see again in two movies. And I think he's a great character, and I wish we'd seen more of him. But all in all, yes, this is a weak one. The most compelling thing in the movie, and this is telling you all you need to know, is the homage to Goldfinger, where Gemma Arterton's character, the unfortunately named Agent Strawberry Fields, is doused in oil and laid on a bed a la Jill Masterson at the beginning of Goldfinger. It's a cool nod. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. It's not like it was commemorating anything. But, you know, Craig's fine. You know, he's still kind of new to this, and I feel like he hadn't quite settled. I think you'll agree with that. I think almost anyone who watched the next movie will also agree with that. Olga is a good Bond girl. You know, she's out for revenge. It's not an unfamiliar story, but she's a tough cookie. She's not a terrible character, solid actress. It's just regrettably forgettable. That's. I mean, we get Jeffrey Wright back as Felix Leiter, the first time we get a back-to-back same actor portrayal of Felix.
Yes.
But again, he doesn't really have a lot of bearing on the story. So again, it's not really memorable. And then for me, it all comes down to this, you know, this confrontation at this hotel in the middle of a desert, which is, you know, a great idea. And you've got Green, who's just a weird looking dude. He's got
these
bug eyes. It's odd. And he's dealing with this general. I forget, was it Bolivian or I forget what nationality general. I don't know where that actor came from. I couldn't understand a word that guy was saying. I don't know what kind of an accent or a speech impediment he had, but I remember being really excited when this movie came out because, you know, new Daniel Craig Bond movie because Casino
Royale. General Medrano.
That's it.
The exiled general whom Green is helping to get back into power. He murdered. So he must be Bolivian based on that.
And you get kind of a resolution to the Vesper storyline, which, you know, Bond had one idea, as did the viewers, had one idea going into this movie, and you realize that it's something completely out of left field at the end, kind of puts a bow on it, you know, so he can move on to, you know, literally as the moment with M at the end where, you know, I forget what the line is, but she essentially says, "You ready to get back to work?" Well, no, that's really the end of the next movie.
Yes.
But it's the same kind of scene where she's like, You done? Can we get on with this now? Yes. So.
Oh, I know you're talking about the scene in the snow.
Yeah, at the end, very, very
she
end.
Goes.
Yeah, when
M tells. Yeah, where M. Well, she asks, "I need you back," and he goes, "I never left."
That's it. Thank you. Yes.
That's it. Yep.
Yeah. Just shows. I've seen this movie twice, and they were both in the theater. I have not seen it since.
Yeah, I saw it. I saw it in the movies. I saw it the first time. I've seen it three times in the movies and then the both times that I've watched through my 50. Yeah, it's confusing. And this is the first time in history where the Bond actor gets involved in the creative side of it. And to be honest, and this is not a knock on Daniel. I like Daniel. Stay in your lane. You know what I mean? Stay in your lane.
Yeah.
No need.
I mean, I understood they were trying to plug holes, you know, like, well, we can't use these guys because they're on strike. Well, what ideas do you have? It's just, it's not a good way to conduct your business.
No, it's not. It's not. And sadly, it would not be the last time Daniel would do that, whether he's asked or not. Yeah, the casting, again, little shaky. The story is just very convoluted. You have a hotel that rotates or goes sideways or whatever the fuck it is. I don't know. It eventually blows up and we have fire and fire's cool and we're in the desert. And the action sequences are fine, but this movie gets way too over its own head with the plot. And it hurts. It hurts the movie. And at this point, the last thing that this franchise needed after a great first movie from Daniel is a lackluster second movie from Daniel. And this was not a cheap movie. The budget was between 200 and 230 million for a movie. Get this. It's only 106 minutes. So it's only an hour and 46 minutes. It's one of the shortest Bonds in a long time. Now it did make close to 590 million. So it made money, but it definitely went over its head. And I think we're getting to the point now where Bond plots are starting to get too clunky. Now, again, the writer's strike, obviously, will, you know, that didn't help it. So I'm not denying that. But, yeah, this was rough. Way too over your head. You know? As you mentioned, Spectre still not touchable. Something tells me they knew they were winning, though. Which is why they kind of use Quantum almost like a bookmark, a placeholder. It's kind of like when you and I, with our networks, they put in PSAs and breaks until the spots come in the next day. It's the same thing like that. Quantum was the PSA waiting for them to be able to use the word Spectre.
good analogy.
Thank you. I knew you'd like that. So having said that, we got a problem because this movie really, and it was a very violent movie. Listen to this. Whereas Dr. No featured 109, this is an interesting study. The University of Otago in New Zealand found it to be the most violent film in the franchise to this point. Listen to this. Whereas Dr. No featured 109, quote, trivial or severely violent acts, 109, Quantum had 250. I don't know if that means anything, but. Now, is Daniel's performance in the movie good? Yeah, it is. But it definitely fell flat in the engaging department. Trying to be engaged into the plot, the role, into the story. It was very difficult.
Yeah, you're spending more time trying to figure out what's actually happening.
Right. Than being able to enjoy it.
Yeah.
And all the villains are confusing and stealing water. Like, what the fuck? Like, why would we steal water? There's go into a sea and take water. Like, I don't get it. Why are we stealing water? I don't know. None of it made any sense to me. And it hurt. And two movies in, this was the last thing that the franchise needed was after a freshman effort that was really good, a sophomore effort that lacked badly. Now, over the next few years, we don't get another Bond film for 4 years. And then we get to, and I'm staring right at it because it's on my wall. It's one of only two Bond posters I own. The other being, which by the way, I don't think I ever told you this, an autographed. I can't believe I don't have it framed. I got to find a good frame for it. I have an autographed Moonraker.
By whom?
By Sir Roger.
Really?
Yes. It's in a tube. It's safe. I just need to find a good frame for it. But yes, I have an autographed Moonraker. I don't know why I don't have it framed. I didn't find a nice one. These Walmart ones doesn't do it justice. In any event, I have a friend of mine gave it to me for a birthday gift years and years ago. Because if I try to pay for that now, yeah, right. I don't think so. We work out the kinks. We go off the farm with this whole quantum confusing consortium thing. And we go back to basics. And that's when we get, in my opinion, to this day, still Daniel's best movie. And for me, a top five movie in the franchise. I am, of course, talking about released on November 9th, 2012. I am talking about Skyfall. And I have a funny story about, well, it's funny from a sad time in my life at the same time, which I'll talk about later. But when I saw the movie, but everything that was wrong with Quantum was right about Skyfall. The acting, stellar. The story, crisp. The casting, perfect. Nothing wrong with this movie at all. Back to Purvis Wayden. Back to the Hollywood law firm of Purvis Wayden. Oh, no. We don't have Mr. Haggis. John Logan helps with the writing. But I think that the biggest decision to make here that saved the franchise again was the choice of Sam Mendes to direct. Sam's pretty awesome. At this point, we need a home run. The franchise needs a home run, just like Spy Who Loved Me, just like GoldenEye, just like Casino Royale. Another moment in the history of this franchise where we need a home run or shut it down. That's how bad Quantum hurt the franchise. But we get a nice, clean story, great casting, great villain, great throw callbacks. Because, and we can't forget this, it's the 50th anniversary of the franchise. And unlike 10 years earlier, when the 40th anniversary of the franchise gave us that, they honored the franchise properly by putting out a wonderful set of the first 22 Bonds on DVD. Which included a slot for when you bought this one, which you and I both have. Then they re-released it with Skyfall in it, and then the next one you could buy separately. But I was nervous when I walked into the theater to see this. I walked out going, this is one of the best movies I've ever seen in my life. What performances by everybody. Daniel's back. We get Judy back for the last time. But as you said, Tech, after two movies, we finally get our Q and our Moneypenny.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get a new name to the mix. Another great actor, by the way. And another great villain. We kind of use the GoldenEye blueprint, except the difference here is Sean Bean had gone into business for himself in GoldenEye. Here, the MI6 agent, played amazingly by Javier Bardem, feels like he was left behind and wants to stick it to his former boss. So a basic script, basic story, worked to perfection. Let's talk about the other rest of the casting. Ben Whishaw is our new Q. And I'm kind of glad that we, because I know I always goof with you when we talk about Doctor Who, that I got pissed off that we had two millennial 20-somethings in a row as Doctor Who in David and then Matt, who both were good doctors. I'm not saying that, but that's a different pod for another day. But having a young guy play Q, I think, was perfect for this moment. And he was good. He's a good actor. And then Naomi Harris, who we don't know her name until the end of the movie, ends up being our new Miss Moneypenny. And there's a great scene. It's the first time that Moneypenny actually kind of goes along with things. And the scene where she shaves him is pretty awesome. Tell me how they went from playing it so wrong in the last one, fast forward 4 years, and we get almost absolute perfection here.
So you said that following Quantum, they needed a home run. They didn't get a home run. They got a grand slam.
Yep.
They just...
Operation Grand Slam.
Yeah, Operation Grand Slam. They nailed it. They absolutely nailed it from start to finish. You picked an established director who brought his unique vision, his unique voice to this franchise, which is exactly what it needed. It's also... Whereas we just spent the last two movies at the beginning of Bond's career, you know, Casino is his rookie 00 mission, you know, Quantum is the follow up. Here we are almost at the other end of his career. You get the sense that this is the guy after all the movies we've seen. He's been at this for a while, to the point where during this mission in this opening, in this cold open, he's shot, he falls off a bridge, he's presumed dead, and he decides, you know what, I think I'm going to stay that way. And he just sets himself up on a beach somewhere, I don't think they even establish where it is, and he is okay with early retirement. Well, it might not even be that early at that point. So here we are with a Bond who's been around. And makes the conscious decision to come back to MI6 after he sees that, they hit them where they live. MI6 itself is attacked, much like in the opening of World Is Not Enough. And specifically M is targeted. I would also like to add, going back to Quantum real quick, the best thing Quantum of Solace added to the Bond franchise is the casting of Rory Kinnear as Bill Tanner.
Yep.
Now, Bill Tanner is a character we've seen before. He is the fill-in for M, who hands Bond his assignment at the beginning of For Your Eyes Only. We see him again, played by a different actor in both GoldenEye and World Is Not Enough. Here we see him again, and this is the guy who has really put his mark on the series. Rory Kinnear also appeared in Penny Dreadful with Bond alums Eva Green and Timothy Dalton. Yep. But this is a guy who... is going to stick around and has stuck around. And I'm really glad he has. He's M's kind of right hand, great actor, great character. But the movie as a whole, man, I don't even know where to begin. It just has everything going for it. Whenever the word Skyfall is said to me, one would think, if you've seen the movie, like, oh, Skyfall, well, that's, you know, the James Bond movie. That's the house. Turns out that's the name of his family estate. When I hear Skyfall, the first thing I think of is the scene in, Shanghai? Shanghai? Or is it Hong Kong? Shanghai. Yes. No, it's Shanghai.
No, I think it's Shanghai.
Yeah.
It's Shanghai.
Where he fights the Patrice, the mercenary assassin, in the all-glass room lit only by the animated billboard outside the building. Yep. It is such a visually stunning and captivating sequence where they're practically shot in silhouette, you know, all backlit by this moving advertisement with the occasional muzzle flash of the gun lighting up the action. It is a spectacular sequence, one among many. You know, everything with Bond at the Macau casino is fantastic. Again, so well lit, such an amazing set. His interaction with Severine is amazing. She's a stunner. Berenice Marlholm, absolutely the sacrificial lamb of this Bond film, in the vein of Solange from Casino and Fields from Quantum. And then it just culminates with Silva. And oh God, the whole introduction of Silva is brilliant. It's one shot. It's one shot as he approaches the camera, tells this story, this whole monologue, the story of his, you know, his youth on his grandmother's island. And right from that moment, you're like, who is this guy? You know, it's Javier Bardem, obviously made a name for himself in No Country for Old Men, but wow, he's a great villain because there's this, I don't want to say unstable aspect to his personality, but you know, he's not afraid to crack a joke at Bond. You know, he kind of says things with a little bit of a cracked smile and a little bit of arrogance, and it's wonderful. Haven't really seen that from a villain in a while. And you know, it culminates with this, you know, hearing in London, and M is the crux of this story. And you know, he's after her, and turns out that when you ask someone like, who's the Bond girl of Skyfall? It's M. She is the female lead. She is the one that Bond is trying to protect, you know? And I absolutely love, you know, in commemoration of the 50th, when they escape the hearing, the shootout at the hearing, when they get to the Aston Martin, it makes me so happy because you just get the theme. You get the original car, you even get the nod at the ejector seat. Oh, it's so wonderful. And then, you know, we end up at Bond's. Yeah. You end up at Bond's ancestral home in Scotland at Skyfall, which you learn what it is and who's there waiting for him. But freaking Albert Finney. There's a casting choice. I wouldn't have
right.
Picked. I mean, it's a fantastic choice. Albert Finney's great. Another one we've lost tragically.
Yep.
You know, and I remember hearing the rumors that Sean Connery was approached to play that role as the gamekeeper. I think that would have taken people out of the movie a bit. It would have been cool. It would have been fun. I also heard that an original idea for Skyfall before it was made to be his ancestral home was it was going to be a kind of a retirement home for past agents. Again, this was all in for the 50th.
Right.
And he was going to get there and Connery, Moore, Lazenby, and Dalton, and Brosnan were all going to be there.
That would have been ridiculous.
As much fun of a fan service moment as that would have been, that would have taken you out of the movie even more. So
yeah,
as cool as that would have been to see, I'm sure in an alternate reality where Eric Stoltz is Marty McFly, they did that version of the movie. But what they do, you know, with the jokingly Home Alone-esque, you know, climax of the film where they booby track the house for Sylvan and his men, it's so great. You know, it's tragic to see the DB5 get itself shut up and blown up. But it comes back. It comes back. Spoiler alert. Yeah. So that's my long-winded way of saying that Skyfall is an absolute home run, grand slam knockout of a movie from start to finish. Great song by Adele. Well-deserved of the Academy Award. I was just blown away by that movie. And I'm glad that they, like you said, it's like Goldfinger, where appropriately the third movie in an actor's run, whereas Dr. No and From Russia with Love, you know, they introduce Spectre, they name drop Spectre, and then they follow through with Spectre. And then Goldfinger is just like, all right, here's a whole nother assignment. you know, unrelated to everything else. And that's what this is. You get Casino, which deals with Mr. White and Quantum, and then Quantum of Solace follows through with that. And here we are like, nope, we're doing something separate. And it works so well. It works just the way Goldfinger did. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's 5 stars. 5 stars for Skyfall.
Yep. And we do get plenty of nods. Again, pulling out with the DB5 literally made me cry. and then the end when, oh my God, it's back to the plush couch door.
Oh, and, yes. And, we got to talk about Ralph Fiennes.
Ralph Fiennes is Gareth Mallory, who's like one of these. And you don't like him in the beginning because he looks like a smug douche. But he settles in and sits there with the sling and you know, you knew he was in the movie for a reason, and that reason is because with Dame Judy's death, well, not her, but her M, we need a new M. And the office looks exactly the same, the little tiny desk. All we needed was the bottle of brandy and the cigar in the ashtray, and Bernard Lee could have been sitting there.
Absolutely.
And he goes, "You ready to get back to work?" "With pleasure, M." Yeah. "With pleasure."
And then we get
Daniel's first gun barrel.
Yes, at the end of the movie.
The end of the movie.
Yeah, but when Pierce Brosnan first walks into M's office in GoldenEye, you know, it's Judi Dench's office. It's a complete, you know, it's very of the time. It's very modern. You know, it's a whole new look. Like, all right, new M, new office, sure. And that was kind of what followed through her run as Brosnan's M and as Craig's M, you know, to the point where in this movie, her office, you know, big glass windows, you know, it's all these, you know, other MI6 employees out in front at their workstations and everything. Very, very modern, very clean, you know, very sterile. And since they blew it up, they had to relocate. And yeah, second he walks through that door and you see that leather quilted padding on that door, and you're like, ugh. Oh my God. Oh, this is Bernard Lee's office. Oh my God. And there's yep. Ralph Fiennes. There's Mallory, the new M behind the desk. I'm like, oh, we're back to basics.
Yep, we are. And again, you mentioned earlier, Adele's song is awesome because, and maybe it's because she's, oh, by the way, we didn't mention the Quantum song, by the way, because it's so ridiculously lame.
God.
The Quantum song is Jack White and Alicia Keys. I just want to confirm the name of the song.
Another Way to Die.
Yeah, it's not called Quantum of Solace. Could you imagine? At least Skyfall you could stick in there. But mm-hmm. Adele did it, and it was really good. It was amazing. There's literally nothing wrong with this movie.
No, there isn't.
There really isn't. It's just so damn good. And well, we'll talk more about Skyfall at the end of the show. So this is a home run. Makes a ton of money. And again, I'm not, and I've talked about this many times, but on previous shows. But the reason this movie has a special thing for me too is I saw it at the theater near my mom's house, near my parents' house in 2012. It was the day before my dad passed away, and we had just visited him at Yale. And her and my brother and I went to see it at the Milford Mall. And, you know, when we went to visit him the next day and he was for the most part out of it, I was trying to like, my mother's like, just talk to him as if he's, and that was what the nurses said too. And I told him about the whole movie. So it's kind of special for me, but, cause he would have liked it. Cause first of all, it was 50 years. So he knew there'd be plenty of old school nods. He would have flipped out over the DB5 too. And, it's his kind of movie. Like he used to hate the Pierces annoyed him. He liked Pierce, but they all four, he didn't even like really GoldenEye that much, which I used to try to needle him on. So this one will always be special to me. And it was once again, the Bond franchise saving itself from despair after a stinker. And it's happened multiple times in the franchise's history. So now they can do whatever they'd like. So we fast forward 3 years to 2015, where we, by the way, Skyfall is the highest grossing Bond film ever. It made, the final total was, let's see, $1.109 billion. Broke a billion. That's Endgame numbers. That's Infinity War numbers. On a $150 to $200 million budget. So, 3 years later, released on November 6th, 2015, at a budget of $245 to $300 million, we get our fourth Bond outing. And finally, all of the legal wrangling is over. And to prove that, they splash the title right on the screen. The fourth Bond film is called Spectre. So we're back. Everybody owns everything. Kevin McClory had since passed away. All the legal mumbo jumbo happened. And now Eon Productions actually not only owns Spectre, but they actually own now Never Say Never Again. I'm surprised they didn't add it to the set when they redid it. That surprised me a little bit. But anyway. We now kind of go back to the Casino Royale Quantum of Solace storyline, although now a little more streamlined. And I think that I was a little nervous again, because I was hoping that even using the title would not be the only thing cool, and then the movie itself would suck. I was a little nervous, not going to lie. Thankfully, I was wrong. Once again, the casting was great. We bring back Sam Mendes, who did a tremendous job with Skyfall, of course. Logan, Purvis, and Wade back to the screenplay. Jez Buttonworth's added. Thomas Newman does the music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's essentially Sam Mendes' guy. So when he came in to do Skyfall, he brought it with him.
And it's not bad. And Skyfall, obviously, the music was great. Ralph Fiennes is back. Naomi's back. Ben Whishaw's back. But here was the thing. We realized that with Spectre being used, we were, yes, going to get a new Blofeld for the first time since Charles Grey. If you want to hear about us talk Charles Grey, go back to part one. I'm sure you already listened to us since you're at this part. We have not had, except for the veiled Blofeld in the pre-credits of For Your Eyes Only, we've not had Bond. We've not had Blofeld since, because Blofeld's part of the Spectre storyline, which was owned by Kevin McClory. The casting choice that made me smile, actually, was the henchman. Because not only now, one of my favorite guys in my other great hobby of pro wrestling is now in the second franchise that I love. Of course, he was in both Guardians of the Galaxy. And now here he is as a henchman in Spectre. And of course, I'm talking about the Animal himself, Dave Bautista, who plays Mr. Hinks, who I think is really cool. And the other big casting choice was who was going to be Blofeld. The name, well, his real name is Franz Oberhauser. That's how he was born. However, I don't remember the other names besides the guy that got the role. Do you?
Names of who?
Actors that were going to play Blofeld.
No, I never heard if there was any... because they were trying to treat that the way they treated Benedict Cumberbatch being cast in Star Trek Into Darkness. But everybody's like, oh, he's going to be Khan. No, he's not going to be Khan. You sure? Because it looks like he's not going to be Khan. This was like, well, he's going to play Blofeld. Well, no. His name is Franz Oberhausen, but it's Blofeld. No. It's not Blofeld. It's Blofeld. So in that, I never really heard any other names associated. Like Christoph Waltz was cast in Spectre, and that was really it for me. I'd never heard of any other potential actors for the role.
And he was pretty damn good, I must say.
He was. Talk about menacing.
Yeah. The movie itself is good. It definitely was not better than Skyfall. But I would put it on level with Casino Royale, but not better than Skyfall. 2 hours and 28 minutes, made $880 million, so it got its money its worth. But the most interesting part of the movie is at the end. Blofeld's captured, he's in custody, and Bond just kind of drives off into the sunset with the Bond girl, Madeline Swan, played by Lea Seydoux, who was, she was okay. And then I watched it and went, well, I guess that's it, right? So I have to say, at the time, I thought we were done, right? Didn't you get that inkling at the end?
That is certainly the impression a lot of people, myself included, were left with, because, he drives off, you know, seemingly retired from MI6. You know, he got the girl. And it seemed as if this arc of the James Bond mythos had concluded. You know, a story that started with Casino Royale. We meet the Daniel Craig Bond. We see Quantum. We see Skyfall. And then we see this. And that's it. That's it. It's a four-movie arc. And, you know, I would not have been surprised if in 2 years somebody came out and said, all right, we're rebooting again with a new Bond. And I mean, not that I would have liked them to do that, but I wouldn't have been surprised if they had done that.
So I was a little taken aback by the end of Spectre. Having said that, I think the movie's tremendous and it's very, very well done. Not better than Skyfall, on par with Casino Royale, and most certainly better than Quantum of Solace. So there was a lot of issues with this in terms of writing. Daniel Craig wanted to get more involved in things, which I still think is a bad idea. And from here on out, I thought we were done, even though the rumor was that Daniel Craig had one left on the deal. Through four movies, he was pretty burnt out, but he signed on. And true to his word and true to his contractual obligation, he will do his fifth and final Bond coming up this November, depending when you're listening to this, may already be out, November of 2020 with No Time to Die, which is typical Bond-sounding title, which you and I will talk about in November when we do an updated version of Pop Goes the Movies, because you and I will talk about it. To this point, your thoughts on Craig as Bond and these four movies?
I've always liked Daniel Craig as Bond. Like I said, I'm glad I went in cold with him, not knowing anything about him. It was kind of like seeing the new Star Wars movies. I didn't know who John Boyega or Daisy Ridley were, so I was able to perceive them as those characters with any predispositions. As we discussed, Quantum is definitely the blip on the radar in terms of his tenure as the low point. Casino Royale is a great movie. I definitely ran. Well, I mean, Skyfall is the best of his four, but Casino Royale comes close. It does not eclipse it for me, mainly because that movie comes to a grinding halt in Act Three. As soon as Le Chiffre gets gunned down by Mr. White, and they move to the hospital where Bond is being kept, the movie just slows to a halt. But that's all right, because the best part is everything before that.
Right, I agree.
But I love it. Like I said, I love the song. I love the use of the song in the movie. I like how David Arnold chose to use the theme from the song rather than the James Bond theme under the mentality that he had, quote, not earned the theme yet. So we watched Daniel Craig become Bond.
Right.
It's something we hadn't seen with any of the other actors. You know, they were just Bond, you know, even George, like George was, you just had to accept him as James Bond. But here we saw the progression. We saw arcs. Like I said, Quantum just kind of follows through on Casino, doesn't really add much. Skyfall just nails it, absolutely nails it, you know. And like I said, it's cool to see kind of Bond early and then Bond later, kind of bookending everything, right, so to speak. Spectre is, you know, ever since I saw it, I've called it Bond's greatest hits because it's a lot of stuff that we'd seen before. Not to the detriment of the movie. Like I swore when I saw the trailer for that movie, I swore we were getting a On Your Majesty's Secret Service remake, to the point where, you know, we have a clinic in the Alps, you know, you have the character of Mr. White, who is essentially being portrayed in a Draco type manner of, hey, Bond, help me out with my daughter. You know, she is essentially a Tracy-like character to the point where he ends up with her at the end of the movie. And I would not have been surprised if Mr. Hinks, who disappeared in a very Jaws-esque manner off the train,
I know,
towards the end of the movie, showed up at the end and gunned her down in a drive-by, a la Irma Bunt.
Irma Bunt, I know. Yeah.
But they did not draw that comparison. But even, I'm telling you, man, go back to the the Spectre trailer. There is music from the theme of Majesty's Secret Service in the trailer, which further bolstered my belief that we were getting a remake. Thankfully, the comparisons really ended there, and they didn't go forward with that. They went with their own story.
Right.
I am very curious to see how Daniel ends his tenure. I hope he does not go out on a whimper like Pierce did. I don't see that as a possibility, because even though the movie has been delayed, you know, from its original April 2020 debut, I'd like to think that even though production of things isn't really happening right now, they may have a chance down the line to maybe tweak it. I mean, the movie may be in the can and they're just waiting to release it. That's for all I know. But who knows? If they have the opportunity to do that and they go ahead and do it just to make it even better than it might already be, I say all for it. I'm looking forward to see Ben Whishaw's Q again. I'm looking forward to seeing Naomi Harris's Moneypenny and Rory Kinnear's Tanner and Ralph Fiennes M. I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful for a fifth and final from Daniel Craig.
That delivers. Oh, we know we're going to get a good bad guy because everything I've seen him in is awesome.
Yes.
So, all right. Before we close the book on this journey, I already put you on the spot once tonight, and I'm going to put you on the spot again. From 5 to 1, rank your top 5 Bond films of all time.
5 to 1. I've done this, you know. I think I'd be able to rattle this off, but now I got to think about it again.
Okay, well, you're thinking, no, I have my 5.
Okay, yeah, you do that, because okay. I am on the spot here.
All right, I will do. All right, number 5. Is Live and Let Die. 4 is Moonraker. 3 is Skyfall. 2 is Goldfinger. And 1 is For Your Eyes Only.
It's good. It's a good lineup.
You can tell who my favorite Bond is, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So,
all right. It's going to have to be. Going to be Moonraker at number 5. Casino Royale at number 4.
Okay.
GoldenEye at number 3.
Oh.
Skyfall at number 2. And Goldfinger at number 1.
That's a great top 5. That's a great top 5. I like that. I have no qualms with any of those choices. By the way, I just watched I actually just put it on YouTube while we're watching. I put on the Moonraker. I actually have a playlist of all the, remember that trailers list I created? I actually found all 25 trailers. So I, as you said, Moonraker, the Moonraker trailer popped up.
Nice.
So there you have it, folks. Five parts. My, one of my favorite movie franchises ever. One of Tech's favorite movie franchises ever. We hope you enjoyed it. We hope you enjoyed the journey. And if you were a casual Bond fan, if you're diehard, you're still a diehard. If you're a casual Bond fan, we hope that you we kind of led you down a better path. And right now, I'm pretty sure all the movies are on Amazon Prime. If you're not a, if you're a casual fan, you don't own any of them. I'm pretty sure right now they're all on Amazon Prime. I think they just dropped them a couple weeks ago, I think. You could, they have a bunch of them out right now on DVD and Blu-ray individually. You can get them pretty cheap. Or if you want to, sink the money, because I don't know how much our sets are right now. You can get the Bond 50. The updated Bond 50 has all of them except Spectre. Spectre you'd have to buy separately. Tech and I have the first edition, which had them all up to Quantum of Solace, and then they left a slot in there, which is actually kind of cool. Remember it had that little cutout circle thing? It was kind of neat.
Absolutely. I used that as a coaster.
Mine's around here somewhere. Where you could buy Skyfall and put the Blu-ray in it, which is what I did. It actually worked out great because my copy was had a DVD, a Blu-ray, and the digital code. So I kept the Blu-ray. I put it in the slot. I gave my mom the case with the DVD in it, and I gave my sister the code, and she uploaded it into her iPad or whatever. Sadly, Spectre didn't have that. Spectre, I got the Steelbook, and it just had the DVD in it, the Blu-ray in it. So, pretty cool Steelbook, by the way. It's got the circle with the glass that turns into the spider. Pretty cool. Tech, where can people find you?
Oh, well, only a couple places. If you are so inclined, you can give me a follow on Twitter at Hal Dameron, H-A-L-D-A-M-E-R-O-N, named after my two favorite fictional pilots. Or you could follow me on the Instagrams at Technicolor, T-3-K-N-I-K-O-L-O-R, which is also my Xbox gamer tag. Or you can check out good old openthefridge.net, which will take you directly to our YouTube page, since the site itself is no longer up. You can find some cool interviews with voice actors and some other talented folks at the numerous Comic-Cons me and my former partner used to attend over the years.
And they're all pretty awesome. I've listened to most of them. Yes. Of course, you can check me on Twitter at PTBPodfather. You check me on Facebook. I'm on all the pages, of course, here, the purveyor of the Place to Be Wrestling Network, Place to Be Nation's Pop Feed, which you're listening to now, and, of course, PlaceToBeNation.com. This will not be the end of Tech's time here, of course. He wasn't just brought in for this. You will hear him down the line doing many things, and maybe eventually he will have his own show. We'll see. He's got plenty of ideas in that head. But right now he is awesome doing these great movies, and him and I have already started kicking around what our next theme would be. Probably a lot of fun. Star Wars, maybe not. Not at the moment, only because we just did the big show back in December. When we did the when I had the gang on to talk about the franchise right before Rise of Skywalker came out. Maybe another franchise that starts with a star. As we're pining for another film.
Oh, we're going to do a Starman podcast?
Exactly. Who doesn't love Jeff Bridges, damn it? And Karen Allen's kind of hot. You mean Dave Starman? No, God, no.
Dave Starman.
Anyway, that's for Tech, I'm... Yes, yeah, exactly.
See, that's what makes it a franchise.
Exactly. The sequel from St. Cloud State. No. He's Tech. I'm Scott. We hope you enjoyed the journey. We hope you enjoyed your vodka martini, shaken, not stirred. Thank you, 007, for the many years and hopefully more to come.
This is the end. Hold your breath and count to 10. Feel the earth move and then hear my